First of all, I'd like to thank the symposium organizer and AMS gave me this opportunity to give you an overall talk on the topics of MJO. This talk was supposed to deliver to a general audience without too much background on MJO. So for the MJO experts, maybe this is just a scratch on the surface, and I apologize for that. I don't know how many people here have never been really take a close look at MJO. So if you're not too familiar with it, and this is what you see. On the top is the total precipitation. On the bottom is the precipitation anomaly. And the emanation just show the heavy precipitation or positive anomaly of precipitation move gradually from the Indian Ocean eastward to the Pacific Ocean and disappear there. So that's pretty much the essence of MJO. Of course, on top of that, there's the circulation and there's moisture variability. I'm going to touch upon that. So in this talk, within the next probably 25 minutes or so, I'm going to pack a lot of things. So for each topic here, I'm only going to speak very briefly. I'll start with the impact, global impact of the Mediterranean Oscillation, MJO, and talk about the predictions and modeling theories, observations, and then I will just say, look into the future, what we should expect. So let's start with the global impact of the MJO. During the last decades, and we found that MJO actually can impact many different types of severe weather or extreme weather globally, which include flood, heat waves, cold surge, tornado, hurricane, and wildfires, and many, many other things. And I'm just going to use one example, which probably many of you are familiar with. That's the MJO modulation on tropical cyclones. And here shows each line is a track of tropical cyclone. Green color represent the positive anomaly of precipitation. And for the four panel from up and down, you can see that it green color move eastward gradually. That's the signature of the MJO. And you can pick up any region that you would like to see. For example, in the Atlantic and the Gulf region, and during this period of time when the heavy MJO precipitation is over Indian Ocean, you can see there is a certain density of hurricane tracks. And then you move to some other period when the MJO heating anomaly moved to into the Western Pacific. You can see the density become much, much light. It just tells you the MJO modulation on the probability of a hurricane in that part of the world. And if you move to the Western Pacific, and you can see the opposite. In this period of time, you have much more lines in the Northwest Pacific. And in this period of time when the MJO convection center is over the Indian Ocean, it's much, much lighter. So it just tells you globally how the MJO would modulate the probability of tropical cyclones. In addition to weather, MJO also modulate or connect to many global climate mode. And this figure just simply identifies some of them. This is the climatological mean precipitation, the background color from TRIM. And MJO can modulate ENSO, El Nino, NAO, that's the North Atlantic Oscillation, AO, that's the Arctic Oscillation, and many other different O's. Also, MJO can influence the monsoon, Indian Ocean dipole, Indonesian through flow, that's the ocean current. This is the Antarctic circumpolar currents and ITCZ and storm track and many other things. And I only use one example, is the El Nino, to demonstrate the connection between MJO and the climate. We all know that we are currently experiencing a very strong El Nino event. This figure is the time series of SST anomaly. Time goes down, and this is the longitude. Here, the red color represents positive SST anomaly in the central and the eastern Pacific, and this is what we have currently, El Nino. And these events occur almost through the early year, gradually developed and mature by now. And if you remember, in the early part of 2014, and there is a sensation in the media that an El Nino was coming. And there's a lot of media coverage and a lot of ENSO experts talk about this, but it didn't materialize. At the end of that year, we really did not have any El Nino. And what happened? If you talk to ENSO experts, and you probably get all different explanation. My explanation is the following. Here is the same plot, but for surface zonal wind field. Both of them are from the Tau array in the Pacific. And you can see that leading to the mature ENSO this year, there are several very strong MGO events. And you look at the 2014, there was one in early year, that's before we know the spring ENSO prediction barrier. But after that, we really did not have any strong MGO event, and that's my explanation. The El Nino failed to develop in 2014 because we didn't have MGO to push it. And the past results, past studies have demonstrated that MGO really can help, can encourage development of ENSO, even though the MGO alone probably is not the sole cause of ENSO. But without a strong MGO, you won't have strong ENSO. And for the modern record, we never had a single strong ENSO El Nino event without a series of strong MGO preceding it. So, given this global impact of MGO on weather and climate, we would naturally expect that we should be able to forecast the MGO. So let's talk about the MGO prediction. This figure shows a gradual increase of prediction skill during the last decades. This is the European Center MGO prediction skill. The score is measured by correlation of RMM index. If you recall earlier, Catherine gave a talk about RMM index. So it's the predict RMM index correlated with observed or RMM index from real analysis. And the correlation, the blue color is 0.5, red is 0.6, and purple or brown is 0.8. Depends on how high your bar is, you can measure the prediction skill. For example, the common one is 0.5. I don't know why people pick this as common measure of the prediction skill. And based on this, you can see currently we have the prediction skill at MGO to about 32 days. But if your standard is very high, you demand higher correlation between the forecast and the observations, say 0.8 correlation, then you can see our prediction skill is only 14. But one important message here is the gradual increase is not coming on its own. Each time, for example, here, you see a jump of prediction skill is because the model, the European Center model, have substantial improvement, in particular in their cumulus parameterization. So the improvement is gradual, it takes a long time, and each one is associated with model physics. One thing related to what I said about how you measure the prediction scale is this. This is for the particular MGO events. It's the November MGO event during Dynamo. We heard several people mention this. And based on the European Center prediction, and this is the same correlation, each line is each member of the ensemble. And you can see up to 15 days, the correlation remains very high. Based on this, we have a very good prediction scale. But on the other hand, if you look at the root mean square error, that measured the difference between the predict and observed amplitude, you can see up to 15 days, the error has increased by three times. And if you look at the precipitation, this only measured by pretty much by wind. If you measure by precipitation rainfall, you can see by day 15, the amplitude of MGO in precipitation has dropped more than 50% compared with the observed. So this dashed line is observed. So even though we can probably predict the pattern of the MGO, we can really not predict the intensity of the MGO based on this measurement. So we still have a problem. The problem is what? Is our model is not good enough. So let's look at the model. Almost 10 years ago, there is a comparison of model capability of reproduced MGO. And so this lists a bunch of models. That these two panels are from observations. I want you to pay attention to this red line, which marks the propagating speed of 5 meters per second. And you can see in observations, the precipitation contour is pretty much aligned with this red line. That means precipitation anomaly propagated 5 meters per second eastward. So time goes down. And if you look at all the other models, you can rarely see any model can reproduce that. Maybe some model give you some eastward propagation. This one is a little bit too fast. This one is a little bit too slow. None of them actually match that 5 meters per second. That's 10 years ago. What about now? This is now. And the time goes up this time, and then this dashed line marked the 5 meters per second propagation, and observation is here. And from here, you can, most models still cannot produce any MGO, but you can select some of the model actually do very good compared with 10 years ago. So if you are a half glass is a full type of person, you say we made great progress. Look, we have some model can produce very good MGO. If you are half glass is empty type of person, you say, hey, come on, look about the rest models. We still cannot do. So it depends on your perspective. So by this time, this is the CMIP generation model. This is the model the most recent IPCC report is based on, and only 18% of them can reproduce MGO. The rest, you cannot. So we still have a long way to go in terms of simulation of MGO. Next, I'm going to talk about two actually very impressive advancement in modeling during the last decades. One is called super parameterization. That is to replace the conventional cumulus parameterization, use a two-dimensional cloud resolving model in each GCM grid box represented here. And it turns out that actually can improve the MGO simulation among many other features very well. A comparison is here's the trim observed two MGO events. Time goes up. And here is the CAM model with conventional parameterization. You can see the eastward propagating signal, but it's much, much weaker. When you switch the parameterization from conventional to this super CAM, super parameterization, then you can see the propagating signal is much, much strong. And actually, this model can produce a lot of features much better than the conventional cumulus parameterization. The second one is the global cloud resolving model, and Tokomi talked about this morning, so I won't say that too much. The bottom line is this global cloud resolving model without any cumulus parameterization can do pretty decent good job to reproduce MGO. And this just gives you an example. This is a trim, and it's just two different runs. And the results is very good. In addition to that, and I don't know how many of you catch the poster downstairs, and there are some regional models can produce the MGO also very, very, very well. So we made actually a lot of progress in terms of modeling. Let's jump to theory. How much we understand the MGO dynamics? This is the Mandan-Julian's sketch illustrating the MGO main observed MGO feature, eastward propagation, circulation, and modeling. And any MGO theory will have to do at least two things. Number one, to forecast or to predict the scale selection, why the MGO is such a planetary large-scale phenomenon, number one. Number two, it has to predict the eastward slowing propagation, 5 meters per second or so. Okay, any MGO theory will have to do that. And if the theory is good enough, you can probably should be able to explain the irregularity. Sam just mentioned one such theory. And if your theory is really good, you can actually predict the structure of the MGO. Talking about a structure, there's one very important thing about MGO. That is, if you look at the OLLR anomaly, the minimal OLLR here represent the MGO convection center. And here is the vertical profile of anomalous humidity. East of the MGO center, you have a low-level positive anomaly in humidity. West of the convection center, you have the negative. So it's moistening to the east, drying to the west. And this has built into many MGO theories. And a lot of people try to explain this in terms of theoretical understanding. We have a lot of ideas about how MGO produced. Each of these sketch diagrams represent the idea what happened associated with MGO. And there's many of them. There's more and more. And the recent ones are prettier, you have to say. But come down to theory. really what we can theoretically understand. This one is the classic theory of the MJO. It's based on frictional coupling Rossby and the carbon wave. And this developed by Bing Wang in late 80s and early 90s. The essence of this theory is that when you have an easterly wind in the boundary layer, the Coriolis force will force the wind coming toward the equator and give you moisture convergence. And then the moisture convergence will provide the source of instability. And with the coupling of Kelvin wave to the east and Rossby wave to the west, and you have this MJO package that move eastward. And there's many new things added to this theory later on. But this is one theory, and in my opinion, this is still one of the most complete theory, because they start from the first principle, and without much assumption, then build up, then give you the selection of scales and the eastward propagation speed. There's some problem with this theory, as many other theories. The second one, this one is dubbed as moisture mode. This actually gained more popularity recently. And here I want to quote Adam Sobel. He's the advocate of this theory. And this, in the essence of this theory, the instability, the growing of the MJO is due to the coupling between radiation and clouds. And then the eastward propagation is due to moisture convection by larger scale circulation. So in this one, the difference is really the radiation is very important, and larger scale circulation is important. Let's move to the next one. This one is not really theory, but it's very popular. Almost everybody likes this paradigm. It's called discharge-recharge. And it started from early 90s by Bladay and Hartman, and then the people just keep adding ideas to that. But so far, there's actually no theoretical formulation of this idea. But generally speaking, you can see that this is the MJO center, and this green color represents humidity. You can see you have this gradually moisting east of the convection center of the MJO. And in terms of moistening, in this paradigm, is the cloud actually help themselves. A low cloud will moist the low level and encourage more cloud to grow and gradually moisten the higher level, and these processes keep on until you have deep convection. This is a very neat idea. Only problem is we do not know how this will select the MJO scale and eastward, slow eastward propagation. So still remain a very interesting idea, but not theory. Next one, this is the most complicated one. This one basically focuses on the fact that within the convection center, you have all different type of clouds. You have a low cloud, you have we call the congested cloud, you have deep convection, you have a stratiform convection. They all behave stochastically. They all have a different function in terms of heating, listed here, in terms of momentum transport, in terms of a moistening of the environment. To capture all those things together, you need a concept of multi-cloud, multi-scale, and stochasticity. Okay? Put them together mathematically is very challenging. There's only a few people can do that, and one or two of him probably are in this room. So this theory may basically say, in order to have MGU to sustain, to propagate, you have to consider this multi-scale, multi-cloud, and stochastic nature of the things. Sam actually touched upon this earlier in his talk. Let's move on to observations. In terms of observations, we have a lot of results during the last decades. Some of them are presented earlier today, and I only want to mention two things. That is very unusual, in my opinion. One thing is some of you probably familiar with Yahtzee years of tropical convection. And this is a program that congregate, collect all available data from sidelined, from model simulation, from everywhere, put them together. And so people can use those data to address many different issues related to tropical convection. And one focus of this program is the MJO. And actually, because of this program, there's a related, a large multi-model simulation project that try to reproduce two MJO events during this period of time. And there's a lot of interesting information coming off this data set. And this is called a virtual global field campaign, because it actually collects all the information globally. In addition to this, we have a real field campaign, and this is the Cindy Dynamo, and we heard many people talk about early today. And Cindy Dynamo happened in 2011, 2010, over the Indian Ocean, and the purpose is to try to understand the initiation of the MJO. And there's a sounding array, a large-scale sounding array. There's a radar at the different sites, and there's aircraft and the ships and many, many different instruments, moorings, for example. If I want to show you one single result out of this dynamo field experiment, that has to be related to radar. I mean, don't get me wrong. There's many good results coming from this experiment. If I have to show one, that's radar. And because we have these multi-frequency radars that cover all different spectrum of cloud, it's the first time we really can actually observe how different type of cloud varies through different phases of MJO. Even though at this time we still don't know whether those detailed cloud evolution is essential to the MJO or not, like George actually pointed out, we don't know. But the only way to know is to go into the detailed observations. So I'm showing you three examples. The first example is a single radar observations based on Gann Island, is the ASPOL. Each color represents one type of hydrometer. You don't have to worry about exactly they are. But the idea is you can see through the three MJO events during Dynamo, we know exactly how much each type of the cloud actually occur at, during this entire period. And if you collect all the three MJO together into the RMM index phase, RMM phase, this is what you have. Again, each color represents a different type of mesoscale system. And you see, can see how different type of mesoscale system evolve at different phases. And further, because the ASPOL has the dual polarization capability, we can actually retrieve some hydrometer information from the model. And this result showing a sketch illustrating how the hydrometers, different type of hydrometer, is listed here. Okay, again, the details is not important. Different type of hydrometers line up with different type of convection. This is the deep convective cell with the updraft, and this is the stratiform cloud with the middle level inflow and surface wind. So you can see, based on the radar retrieval of hydrometers, we now can know what type of hydrometers occur at what relatively to at what level and relatively to the flow pattern. And go beyond this, we will be able to actually see what type of hydrometer we would expect at a different phase of the MJO. And this is the first time that we can do that. And without Dynamo, there's no way we can do that. Satellite data at this stage cannot give us information. Whether this is important to MJO still need to be found out. But at least we have the capability to find out. And that's the point. Let's make a summary. The last decade, I would say, we have a booming business in the study of the MJO. We have several new theoretical ideas for understanding MJO dynamics. And we have two types of modeling with a very promising capability to do forecast. And one is the global cloud resolving model, and the other is the superformization. And we have enormous data coming from conventional global models, thanks for several international projects. I only list three of them. The first one is the projects that look specifically the vertical structure of the MJO. Look specifically the predictability of the MJO using hindcast. The second one is looking at the MJO vertical structure. And the third one is look at the seasonal, sub-seasonal prediction, and the S2S. This is a very new project. And in addition to that, we have enormous data coming from a virtual field campaign and a real field campaign. Looking forward from now to the next decade, what should we expect? I would say we'll have a golden decade for the study of MJO. We are expecting another field campaign, international field campaign, and this time we'll focus on the maritime continent. And the reason for that is we know that MGO sometimes can propagate through, sometimes cannot. We don't know why, and the model exaggerates this, what we call the MGO barrier effect, and we want to understand that. And together with this, there's international organized efforts to look at the model capability to predict MGO through the maritime continent. So this, too, will give us tremendous data, will carry us through the next decade. And I hope, this is my hope, that we can narrow down the core dynamics. So far, we have several competing theories, and I think give us 10 more years, probably we can narrow it down and maybe focus on the very essential part of the MGO dynamics. And I hope we will come up with new modeling tools. And one thing is on the horizon, and Tomoki already talked about that, is we can have this stretching smash global model that actually have a very fine resolution in a certain area that you need it. Maybe there is some more modeling capability. That's what we really hope. But by the end, the next decade will be judged by how well we can forecast the MGO. And I certainly hope we can forecast MGO beyond 2 weeks and into perhaps 2 months timescale. And that is actually the goal of the S2S project. And if we can do that, that's not enough. And I think by the end of next decade, we should be able to deliver MGO forecast information to the users so they can take meaningful action. In other words, by the end of next decade, the MGO study can really lead to benefit of society. And I hope that would be the legacy of the next decades for the MGO study. So I'm like Leslie. I'm finished early, so you're not only one. Okay? All right, so I'll stop here and take a question. Well, the issue is the seasonal prediction model cannot produce the MGO. So that's a big problem. The MGO can be predicted so far only up to, you know, maximum 30 days. So they want the seasonal prediction and the model simply does not have any MGO signal in it. That's the problem. So that's what I say, you know, we really hope the MGO prediction skill by the end of next decade can extend beyond 2 weeks to 2 months at least. And that probably will give some leeway, give us some kick to help predicting El Nino. You know, the MGO cycle is, the MGO lifetime cycle period is 60 days. Yeah. Right. So at this moment, based on current MGO predictability study, we the MGO predictability is about 50 days. But of course, the model we use is not perfect today. So I expect that MGO predictability probably will be longer than that. But how much longer, I really don't know. Well, the there's interaction between MGO and ENSO, definitely. But we know from interannual timescale, there's really no correlation between MGO and ENSO, except if you look the MGO earlier and ENSO later, there's a high correlation. So MGO always occur early than ENSO development.